There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus.
Huh?
Venus.
Why not? We've bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Rees-Bonnell, and I am your host. On today's program, the rise of community radio in India. Sure, in North America, we've been able to take community radio for granted for over 50 years. But it's now just recently been legalized in India. We'll hear part of a program on this issue that comes to us from CKUT in Montreal, Canada. And of course, we'll catch up a bit of what's going on in our media environment first with some headline news. Do stay tuned. According to speakers claiming to be representatives of ExxonMobil and the National Petroleum Council, the current energy policies of the United States and Canada are increasing the chances of enormous global calamity. However, there is a solution. To keep fuel flowing, the billions of dead bodies can be converted into an oil product called Vivoleum. That presentation was given at the Go Expo, Canada's largest oil conference in Calgary, Alberta, on June 14th. But the speakers were not actually representatives of the NPC and ExxonMobil. No, they were Andy Bickelbaum and Mike Bonanno of the identity correction group, the Yes Men. Posing as NPC representative Shepard Wolf, Bickelbaum told the Go Expo that, quote, "We need something like whales, but infinitely more abundant," end quote. Speaking as noted Exxon rep Florian Osenberg, Bonanno explained, quote, "With more fossil fuels comes a greater chance of disaster, but that means more feedstock for Vivoleum. Fuel will continue to flow for those of us left," end quote. The Yes Men then handed out commemorative candles they claimed were made up of a Vivoleum obtained from the body of an Exxon janitor who died cleaning up a toxic spill. After the Yes Men played a video tribute wherein the supposed janitor said he wished to be transformed into candles after his death, the Go Expo organizers got wise to the hoax and forced the Yes Men from the stage. They were retained by security guards until Calgary police arrived and determined that no major crime had been committed, allowing the Yes Men to leave. According to the Yes Men, the point behind their hoax was to draw attention to the use of Canada's oil sands and so-called liquid coal, which are keystones of the U.S. President Bush's energy security plan. According to environmental groups, mining oil sands is one of the dirtiest forms of oil production. In a press release, Yes Man Bickelbaum said, quote, "Putting the former Exxon CEO in charge of an NPC and soliciting his advice on our energy future is like putting the wolf in charge of the flock," end quote. The Yes Men were already in Calgary in order to promote their new book and a showing of a documentary about them, and they took advantage of the fact that their appearance coincided with the large petroleum conference. The Yes Men have been pulling off these sorts of hoaxes, which they call identity correction, for years. Last year, the Yes Men appeared as representatives of Halliburton to show off a new technology called a Survival Ball, a large inflatable ball that someone could live inside in order to survive rising sea levels resulting from global warming. They made even larger headlines in 2004 when they appeared on BBC television, posing as representatives of Dow Chemical, saying that the company would make reparations, long overdue, for the Union Carbide Bhopal disaster. Dow is the owner of the former Union Carbide's assets. Go to Vivoleum, Vivoleum.com to learn more about the hoax. Go to the Media Geek website, MediaGeek.net, to hear previous interviews with the Yes Men from May 2006 and December 2004. And looking across the border to our friends up north again, It's pretty rare that you hear of a station losing its license here in the United States, especially as a result of anything that goes over the air, even though shock jock Howard Stern garnered millions of dollars in fines for the stations he was aired on and for his former employer Infinity Communications, none of those stations ever lost a license. But up in Quebec City, rock station CHOI-FM is one step closer to being shut down. It already had its license renewal denied by the CRTC, which is the same thing as the FCC here in the United States. And now the Canadian Supreme Court refused to deny that denial, I guess, as you would call it. The Canadian broadcast regulator denied CHOI a license in 2004, saying it had received numerous complaints about racist and offensive comments made by the station's on-air personnel, particularly former morning show host Jean-François Fillon, who has since resigned. Now, tens of thousands of people rallied in Ottawa and Quebec City to protest the ruling, which also drew criticism from several federal and provincial politicians. A three-judge panel had ruled that the station could continue to broadcast while it mounted an appeal of the decision by the Canadian Radio, Television, and Telecommunications Commission. CHOI, better known locally as Radio X, was bought last year by Quebec's Radio Nord, with the CRTC approving the sale in October. Something you don't hear too much of here in the U.S., but indeed, the Canadians have often had a slightly different view towards the licensing of stations and towards content. And perhaps someone might learn a thing or two down here in the U.S. Since the FCC only just yesterday, which would be June 14th, according to the air date here, turned down the denial of licenses that were requested for TV stations in Milwaukee and Chicago. The petitioners had asked these 19 TV stations not have their licenses renewed because they had failed to provide adequate election coverage in the last election cycle, saying that that was part of the quid pro quo, part of their performing in the public interest. The FCC said that the petitioners had not provided adequate details proving their claims, therefore the licenses should be renewed. So much for the public interest. And this is Media Geek. Check it out online, as I said, at MediaGeek.net. You can get the radio program at radio.MediaGeek.net. You can also subscribe to the podcast there to get automatically downloaded to your computer or MP3 player. If you have any comments about the program, please send them to me, paul@MediaGeek.net. Well, community radio is new to India, and people there hope that thousands of stations will bloom now that the federal government has given its blessing. But that doesn't mean there aren't troubles. And that doesn't also mean, though, that it won't be a great boon for communities to enjoy a type of community media that has been enjoyed in North America and many other places for decades. Emmanuel Madan and Jagish Singh, two volunteers with CKUT Radio, Community Radio in Montreal, Canada at 90.3 FM, investigated what this means, the rise of community radio in India, and very nicely gave me permission to share some of that with you.
This is a special show focusing on community radio in India. Due to both changes in broadcast regulations and mobilizing by community radio activists, potentially thousands of community radio stations will emerge in India in the coming 2 years. This show, part one of what will be a multi-part series, explores the rise of community radio in India. You were just listening to two clips from community radio shows in India. The first was from Radio Akyar. Akyar means listen, and it's a community radio show broadcast in the remote Dungs region of southern Gujarat, and it's affiliated with the Drishti Radio Collective. As well, after that, you heard from Namadwani in the village of Pudukkottai in Karnataka. It's a cable radio station for now in India, which is managed by rural women. Namadwani means our voices. For this episode of The Rise of Community Radio in India, we've relied mainly on the perspectives of five people active in some way with the community radio sector in India. We begin the show then hearing from each of those virtual guests who we recorded interviews with from Bangalore, Delhi, Ahmedabad, New York City, Montreal, and Bhopal. Those interviews were recorded in the past several weeks.
We're going to start with Ashish Sen, who is the director of Voices India, which is an NGO in that's committed to community communications and community media. They're based in Bangalore. Voices has been involved in pushing for community radio legislation ever since the Supreme Court decision of 1995, which set the ball rolling for the changes that are going on now. In the interview that we're about to hear, Ashish Sen talks about Voices Namadvani cable radio station, which is happening in the village of Budikote in Karnataka.
We started what has now become a flagship project of ours, the Namadvani project, which Namadvani in Kannada means our voice, which set up a cable radio station in the village of Budikote, which is now managed by poor farmer groups. This is a partnership between NGOs Voices and Merada, as well as the farmer group in Budikote.
Next up, we hear from Stalin Kay, who's co-founder of Drishti Media Collective, which works in the state of Gujarat. He's also the convener of the Community Radio Forum in India. The Drishti Media Collective's work includes a number of community radio programs, including the one that he describes here, the Drishti Media Collective began in collaboration with Kutch Mahila Vikas Sangathan, or KMVS for short, and they are located in northern Gujarat.
In 1997, KMVS thought of reaching out to rural women in Kutch on the issue of local governance. They wanted to discuss women's formal participation in grassroots politics through the village councils, etc. So naturally, we were drawn to doing something on radio. This is how it started. It was very new for us in 97 when we did radio. We had never done radio before that. And then we had an option of either producing the radio programs ourselves, being a media group, or training the activists of KMBS, or the other option of training community members and building their capacities and talents to produce programs. So we decided on the last option.
Our next three guests discussed radio projects with us, which are still in the embryonic stage. Asta Chauhan is an artist and community organizer who's based in Delhi. She works out of an artist center called Khoj, which is located in Kidiki village in Malviya Nagar neighborhood of Delhi. She describes the context of the neighborhood of Kidiki where she works and the radio project that she hopes will be a new meeting place for its residents sometime very soon.
Kidiki is, historically speaking, it was this land that was given to the migrants post the partition, the post-India Pakistan partition, Malviya Nagar, the district under which Kidiki comes, was given away to the Hindus that traveled from Pakistan to India. Where Kidiki is was agricultural land, but because of the population increase and the poverty of the other states and people, the migrants moving into Delhi, this land was soon given away by the agriculture people to these migrant laborers. As of now, most of Kidiki is owned by two or three big landlords who lease out the property to migrant labor who come here mostly without family to live in these bunk accommodations where they double up for sleeping spaces for two or three people by the day and by the night, a different set of people. There's also the migrant labor that comes here is mostly from the states of Bihar, UP, Calcutta, that's West Bengal, and quite a few from Nepal. They don't really intermingle within each other, these migrant people, and the only source of entertainment that they have at the end of the day is to stand around and watch television at probably the barber's shop, which is sort of open and has this television. When Khoj moved here, obviously because Khoj is a space for artists, and artists require everything from cement makers to electricians to carpenters, everything, painters, and all these guys from the street would come into the studio and help the artists with whatever work. What was more important than the art projects was to build a relationship. So the dialogue continued and still continues. So there were these periods, stretches of time where I would just go out and chat, you know, at the tea shop, just hang out with the people, find out who's what, who's doing what, who's getting married, who's just come back from the village. And that is really interesting because that builds relationships. So the way I was looking at it was hopefully to bring the programming out from the people and their conversations, because the stories that each one of them have of the villages back home, of their life here, the poetry that they have is really beautiful. I'm hoping it wouldn't have a very big range. It should just be, you know, closer diameter so that people feel a part of it, of the programming, of the listening, and of being actively involved in it.
Next up, we're going to hear from Satyanath Sarangi, who was interviewed here in Montreal earlier this month, where he was visiting as part of a tour to raise awareness about grassroots campaigns in Bhopal, India. Satyanath has been based in Bhopal since 1984, where he moved to do relief work in the aftermath of the Union Carbide chemical disaster. He is very active with the Sabhavna Trust Clinic, which provides free medical services to the survivors of the Bhopal disaster, and he is an activist with the Bhopal Group for Information and Action. In this clip from Satyanath, he speaks about the potential community radio project related to the day-to-day organizing by survivors in Bhopal.
For us, we have also applied for having a community radio at the Sambhavna Trust Clinic. Particularly, it would be a very good opportunity for talking about issues of healthcare, which about 500,000 people are concerned about, and talk about how it is with the dominant healthcare, which is centered in just modern allopathic medicines and hospital-centered and drug-centered, and talk about alternatives, like traditional alternatives in Ayurveda and yoga and other systems. So, and it could be also one of the things that hasn't happened so far, which is that the giving a voice to the victim.
And finally, we're going to hear from Biju Matthew, who was interviewed for the show by phone. He's originally from Hyderabad, but Biju moved to a part of Western India called New York City. He's an organizer with the New York Taxi Workers Alliance and also a community radio programmer at WBAI. He's also active with the Campaign to Stop Funding Hate, which mobilizes against Hindu right-wing movements in the diaspora. He remains active in the political life of India and has recently worked with community groups in Rajasthan, Madhya Pradesh, and Andhra Pradesh in developing community radio project. Here's Biju as he speaks about those projects.
One of the groups was the Mazur Kishan Sangathan, the Farmers and Workers Solidarity Forum in Rajasthan. That's a group with which I started all the way to South India, where I worked with a group with a very similar name, Saigal Torala Legal Munir Sangam, which is the VTMS, which stands for, again, Workers and Farmers Progressive Forum. Two groups in the middle of India, in Madhya Pradesh, where, for instance, I worked with a group called Adivasi Mukti Sangathan, which is the Indigenous People's Freedom Forum. And so a range of groups like that across the country, all of which, I mean, as I said, share only that common feature that they are mass-based, two, that they are unfunded, and three, that they are politically extremely active. So that's the range of groups I work with, and it's been a really fascinating experience, as I said, in large part because I think, I am committed to the idea that community radio belongs to them. I mean, and both in terms of the fact that if a medium like radio has to kind of produce a new politics in India, then these are the groups that will actually be able to do it. Will be actually be able to deliver the goods in terms of using that sound to, you know, produce a whole new politics. And because I think strategically it is crucial that these groups have some control over the spectrum.
Welcome back. So you've heard from the five people who are part of on the ground mobilizing and organizing on the issue of community radio in India. These are the people that we're relying on for our perspectives in this show about community radio in India. I'm going to give a little bit of a history and background to why we're in a situation now where within the next 2 years, potentially thousands of community radio stations might emerge. In 1995, there was a Supreme Court decision in India that ruled, and I quote, that the airwaves are public property to be used for the public good. This was preceded and followed by lobbying, community mobilization to try to open up the airwaves to the communities. Initially, the private sector made use of this ruling to operate commercial stations, but due to the work of groups like the Community Radio Forum, AMARC, the World Association of Community Broadcasters, and others, there's been a major mobilization to make sure that community-based radio stations can operate in India. There's been resistance to this by Indian authorities. I want to quote here from the Washington Post, where a member of the Indian Ministry of Information and Broadcasting, which regulates radio stations in India, said the following: "We have to tread very cautiously when it comes to community radio. As of today, we don't think that villagers are equipped to run radio stations. People are unprepared, and it could become a platform to air provocative political content that doesn't serve any purpose except to divide people. It is fraught with danger." Well, despite opinions like that, the community radio sector in India has mobilized. And as of this past fall, the Indian government, the Indian Ministry of Information and Broadcasting, is prepared to offer licenses to not just the private sector and to not just educational institutions for which they made an exception, but also to NGOs, non-governmental organizations. So essentially, history is being made as we speak. As of last fall, the government indicated that the regulations would be changed to allow for community-based radio stations. And as of now, as we speak, the application forms are online in India, and community-based groups can apply for stations. Now, that doesn't mean there hasn't been community-based initiatives and community-based radios. There have been ways to circumvent the lack of licensing for community radio. So, for example, there's something called narrowcasting, which is delivering radio using non-radio technologies such as loudspeakers or cable. As well, community-based activists, community-based programmers have bought airtime on Air India Radio, the state broadcaster, the rough equivalent of the CBC, to get the message out. But now, as I said, history is being made and potentially thousands of stations can emerge. This is fraught with both possibilities and also problems, and those are the possibilities and problems we'll explore later on the show. But I guess one question is to ask, how is it that the so-called world's largest democracy, which gained its so-called independence in 1947, could for more than five decades not have had any sort of process by which there could be community radio? And that's an issue that Satina Sarangi addressed in the following clip.
In fact, it comes under the Telegraph Act. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the many acts and rules that the Indian government has retained from the British Raj times, in which there were several extremely repressive and repressive rules and acts that the British Raj used to dominate and perpetuate its domination. And you'll find that there are such fairly blatantly repressive rules, like the on expression, right to expression, that totally militate against this right to right of expression, right of gathering. Then there are rules that traditions like categorizing certain tribes as denotified tribes, saying that these are criminal tribes, because the British thought that it was okay to call certain people criminals just by the tribe that they were born into. So you find several regressive acts and rules that still continue from the British Raj times. And Indian Telegraph Act is definitely one of them. And because the way since so-called independence in 47, there have been this rule of dictated by particularly U.S. corporations and big interests like the World Bank. So such repression cannot be could not have been carried out without having a dictatorial system which appropriates public right to airspace.
So that was Satyanath Sarangi from Bhopal speaking about how we can account for the lack of community radio in India for so long, for literally decades, because the legislation on which broadcasting has been based dates back to British Raj times, and that was meant to control the airwaves and to make sure so-called provocative voices couldn't get on. But interestingly, Satyanath also makes another analogy, and that's to traditions that predate the Raj and are being reclaimed. And one such tradition is what he describes as the phenomena of pakia, which are community get-togethers in Bhopal where people talk about current events. And he compares that to the rise of community radio right now. So let's hear about that analogy from Satyanath.
Opportunities include having people listen to like local stuff that was lost to them, traditional stuff that are getting replaced everywhere with Bollywood and Hollywood kind of stuff. And there is a lot of opportunity for reviving the, particularly in Bhopal, which is very, very old and very common, is the tradition of what they call patia, which is people from different backgrounds, social backgrounds, religious backgrounds, getting together and having conversations on personal issues, political issues, issues that affect the entire community or affect certain individuals. And this used to go on till late evening, sometimes till early mornings. And in fact, people made it certain that they created these kind of spaces when they built their houses or their shops. There would be stone slabs meant for this, and the whole culture was that of patia culture. These stone slabs were called patia. So that it is possible to revive all that.
This is the Reading I Like.
And that was portions of part one of The Rise of Community Radio in India, produced by Emmanuel Madan and Jackie Singh for CKUT 90.3 FM Community Radio there in Montreal, Quebec. And I will bring you more from that particular program on next week's program, where we'll hear a little bit about some of the potential problems that community radio might bring to India for all of the good things, or some of the problems with the particular implementation of community radio that has been authorized by the Indian government. That'll be on next week's edition of Media Geek. That brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'm host and producer Paul Riesmandel. I'll be back in 1 week with another half-hour look at independent and grassroots media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. In the meantime, check out the frequently updated Media Geek blog at MediaGeek.net. The program can also be downloaded at Radio.MediaGeek.net, where you can subscribe to the podcast. Media Geek is produced at Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, Illinois, and is heard on 10 other community stations around North America, including KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, KQRP in Salida, California, KRBS in Oroville, California, WSLR in Sarasota, Florida, WTND Macomb, Illinois, WRFA in Jamestown, New York, CKDU in Halifax, Nova Scotia, WYQZ in Warrenton, Bealeton, Virginia, KWMD Kasilov in Anchorage, Alaska, WVEW in Brattleboro, Vermont, and Free Radio Olympia in Olympia, Washington. It's also on the web at Free Radio San Diego, Pirate969.org, and RadioDriftless.org. Media Geek is free to air on your local non-commercial station, too. Just email Paul at MediaGeek.net. That's also where you can send comments about the program, Paul at MediaGeek.net. Thanks for tuning in.